he's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Tuesday, Two for Tuesday, on this November 18th, 2025. This is Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst, certified financial planner. And it's the Best Stocks Now show. We have another red day to begin the day. The risk-off move is now kind of spreading into the bigger stocks. It started out in those tributaries way out there in Neverland, I guess, and now has kind of spreading to the big stocks, AMD, NVIDIA, Palantir, etc. And we're glad to be sitting on a big pile of cash right now, Barry. Very glad, as you know, I mean, the multiple got too stretched in the market. That, for me, that's the bottom line. And the fear in the crypto, I think, has also set some of this off. Right now, the Dow is down 581 points. That's 1.3%. It's at 46,009. The NASDAQ is down 1.5% as we get ready for NVIDIA's earnings, I believe, tomorrow. The NASDAQ is down to 22,372. The S&P 500 is down 1.16%. We've got Bitcoin down again. Bitcoin went under 90,000 there for a little bit here this morning. Bitcoin is currently
giving up all its gains.
Yeah, for the year
2025. Yeah,
it's at 91,118. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. This is my 26th year. I'll be starting my 26th year in the industry here in a couple of months, or in about 8 weeks, I guess, 7 weeks. And Barry, I've seen a lot of cycles during that period of time. I've seen some vicious cycles that were well-deserved. I've seen cycles where the market just gets overstretched and has to go on a diet for a while. I've seen some vicious bear markets. I've seen a couple of really bad recessions along the way. And as far as I'm concerned, this one right here that we're going through, I can tell you the first shot that was fired that really put in a top to the market for 2025. The first shot that was fired was from our friends at the Fed. When they announced that it was very unlikely that there would be an interest rate cut in December, there still may be one, but, I mean, the word on the street was we're not going to get one. That right there put in a top to the market for 2025. I felt very strongly at that time. I wanted to see some empirical evidence to that fact, and we started to get that real quickly. The first thing to go really was crypto, because for whatever reason, there's a correlation between interest rates and crypto. And crypto wanted easy money and a rate cut, a guaranteed rate cut in December, which it didn't get. And that's really where that's the first fairly large tributary that started to really shrivel up. And you know what, Barry? We're seeing the true nature of Bitcoin in all of this. I mean, if you're looking ahead and saying, gee, what happens when we get a recession? You know, what happens when the economy starts to shrink and recede? Is Bitcoin a haven? Is it a safe harbor where the boats will head? No, it's definitely not.
It's a risk asset.
It's a very high risk asset.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we sent kind of messages today. It's like, you know, for me, it kind of seems hard, you know, kind of where we went to. We went into speculative land, right? Because,
you know,
the PE ratio got so high. And then now, right, you've seen the stuff that's pulled back, right, has been in that. And the stuff that's, you know, come back down the most is that stuff that's in, like you said, those tributaries in that speculative area.
Yes.
That's now pulled back. Also, Bitcoin, to me, is a measure of risk appetite. And to me, it's hard to, you know, kind of see, you know, everything, you almost kind of got to see a bit of a bottom in Bitcoin, just because to me it's a measure of risk appetite to kind of, you know, to kind of get back to where the market trajectory, the market was on kind of before this little hiccup.
Well,
I mean, we went a month ago, Bill, we were at 93% chance of another cut at this
yeah.
next Fed meeting in December.
What is
we're
it
now at 50. We're now right at 50%.
50.
So that's a huge move.
Yes. Okay. And that is a huge move. And you've seen the market react, and you find out where you're all of a sudden. You were neck deep in a nice little tributary of the market. All of a sudden,
yeah.
you're standing there naked, right? This is what happens. I mean, it exposes the risk areas
or,
of the market that you don't want.
Or in quicksand. Yeah,
or you're up to your neck in pluff mud, which we
yeah.
have around here in the Charleston area at low tide. And, you know, gold is proving itself as a safe harbor. I mean, gold has held up. It's not at 4,400 anymore because there was some speculation built into gold. But it hasn't sold off nearly as much as Bitcoin has. Gold is still at $4,066, still looks pretty good, still hanging in there. Whereas Bitcoin has gone from 125,000 to 90 now. That is a huge move to the downside. And really, I mean, I think... Well, Barry, at the beginning of the year when we went back to the NASDAQ, when I went back the first time and helped ring the bell, the closing bell, I didn't actually ring the bell, but I was there at the ceremony, then on TV and all this kind of stuff, hooping and hollering. And my number one
Palantir.
Pick was Palantir, and all those young kids.
Bitcoin.
If you're 45, you're a young kid in my book, you know, 42, 43. They were all picking Bitcoin as their number one pick for 2025. And where is it today? It's given up all of its gains and then some. We sold Palantir for 100% or more profit. Okay, so those young whippersnappers, you know, I'm ready to go back this January. We'll see where we go this year. But we're going through a market cycle, and the market goes through cycles all the time, which also begs the question, is buy and hold possible anymore? Well, you know, it would be, I could easily come up with, and I've thought about doing this, okay, for people that don't like to pay capital gains taxes and just want to let money sit and let it ride, I could definitely come up with about 25 stocks in today's world that you could probably do that with, okay? But you're going to see some big ups and downs along the way.
Because at some point you're going to want, I mean, it just seems like it'd be hard just to look at
it's
it, right? And then just being
watch.
Like, you know what, I'd like to rotate out of those three.
Yes, exactly. and I think that's I think that's the prudent thing to do. That's just me. I never was an index fan, a fan of indexes, because there's no protection on the downside. I'm watching Robinhood, for instance, just come unraveled. It's starting to break down, and I found out that there's an inverse ETF on Robinhood. Who's? H-O-O-Z. Who's your daddy? Well, right now it's Who's. It ain't Hood. And I actually bought a little Who's yesterday when I found out, because the chart, there's one chart, the Kiss of Death. Okay, and that is a very yeah. predominant. I sent you a few yesterday.
You did.
And I'm keeping a chart journal that maybe, you know, I'll share at some point in time when I get enough examples. But that Kiss of Death is just the inverse, the opposite of the Kiss of Opportunity, right? Is when a stock breaks out to the upside and burst through resistance, that's the Kiss of Opportunity. Hopefully that's the beginning of a new uptrend. The Kiss of Death is just the opposite. It's when it breaks down below that support level. That is the Kiss of Death. And usually I'll give it a couple of days, but sometimes if the mood of the market is such that it is right now, if that Kiss of Death is even starting to look like it's going to happen, you know, I guess I have my open probability market in my head, right, Barry? I say, you know, that stock's got about a 90% chance that it's going to hit the kiss of death within the next couple of days. Yesterday, I said AMD. AMD. And I love the inverse one on AMD. It's damned. That's the symbol. D-A-M-D. I'll be damned is the symbol, the inverse. And I sent out to the subscribers yesterday towards the end of the day. The thing is, these things are coming on the market all the time. Like, damned has only been around for a few days, all right? And I have to stay on top. But the two big families of funds, Defiance and Granite Shares. So you can go to Defiance website, Granite Shares website, and just look for any individual stocks or little sectors that say short next to them. And a lot of those are very good, profitable potential plays right now. We'll be right back. Second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. A lot of good stories out there in the market today that I think we can learn from. And, you know, I mean, this sell-off and this correction that we're going through is going to set up another buying opportunity. I don't know when, but, you know, all these people, they come to me after the fact. Well, you know, you got to get set up and prepared. Now, nobody knew that on April 8th of this year, we would see the S&P 500 at 4,800 and one of the great buying opportunities of all time. And we took full advantage of that and made a whole lot of money in the interim. And then I said to, I started saying, you know, somewhere in here, because of the speculative nature that this run is getting to, we're going to see a top here at some point in time, and I think we saw it, and I think I started warning about it. I said, get off of leverage. You got to go cold turkey on the leverage right now. That was several weeks ago. I started warning on crypto, and I started warning about, a top being put in, especially from a valuation point of view. You know, and I'm surprised that none of the big, the headlines never really mention the valuation issue. And really, that's the elephant in the room, okay? That 23X, for whatever reason, has proven to be a top in the market for the last 5 years. It happened the last time in 2021. And when I saw that we were hitting a five-year high in the forward PE of the S&P 500, I started watching individual charts very, very carefully and started seeing them react to that in a negative fashion. And it starts at the further end of the market, you know, the speculative end of the market, the rare earth, the small nukes, all of the stuff that everybody was bathing and basking in. All of a sudden, those tributaries started to drain, and they drained rather quickly. and then it started spreading to other areas of the market. And we've still got that 23X to deal with. It got down to 22.5 on Friday. I think maybe we get down in the 21 area, 21.5 area, something like that. And then we start getting set up for the next earnings season, which will be in mid-January. And we could be starting off the year towards the end of January with another big buying opportunity. I mean, that's just the kind of looking out on the horizon there. Like a game of pool, you always look at the next three, four, five, six shots down the road. But that's kind of...
You got to put some English on it, Bill.
Yes, and I think a little help from our friends, a little help from my friends, as the Beatles used to say, we could use. I think the interest rates are too high. They are coming down a little bit. We're at 4.09 today.
Waller did say today that he's, you know, he's on board for a quarter point cut. Of course, you know, he I think he's kind of vying for potentially being the next Fed.
Well,
Fed president.
I said I'm the only guy in South Carolina with a Waller for president sticker on my car. Someone asked me, who's Waller? I said, oh, you know, he's an independent. He's running for Fed governor.
Yeah, right.
I hope he gets it because interest rates are too high. Now, there's some horror stories in private credit today, just horror stories. So I started looking.
Your blue owl.
Is there, oh, you know what? Look at Seeking Alpha yesterday. The dividend hogs were gushing over Blue Owl, hitting an 11%, 12% dividend yield, back up the truck. You know there's a couple of people on Seeking Alpha that's all they do. The only thing they need is a double-digit dividend yield, and they're writing an article and telling people to buy it.
Oh, I'll run a query on, you know, in terms of, hey, I'd like this, you know, this particular range at this maturity level. And, man, I don't know how many Blue Owl, you know, things come up. And it's just like, no, how can I exclude that?
But
then it's
garbage.
Come into this now. I mean, and today they've had, you know, I think what it is with them is they had, you know, one of their offerings, essentially, no liquidity. So
yeah, no
that's
redemptions.
What you've talked about. You can't, you know, they've basically stopped redemptions, and that's an issue, which sparks, you know, concern amongst every other piece of debt that's in that similar space. Right?
Well, yeah, so all of a sudden, no, you can't get out of it. And the same thing was happening with the private REITs. Same exact thing. You buy into a private REIT, you're stuck until there's a liquidity event. And if there's an adverse event along the way, there's never a liquidity event. And you're stuck with something that's worth pennies on the dollar. So if you're out there and you've been put into any private credit whatsoever, you know what? There's going to be a huge exit. it's a very small door to get out of. Now's the time to get out of it. I also saw that one of the big firms, I'll get to that, I think it was BlackRock or something, there was a bunch of malfeasance. I mean, they were loaning to companies, the director of the private credit fund was loaning to companies that he had interest in, like telecoms that were like way out there in the Netherlands. It's just not good. So I did look for if there was any inverse ETFs against private credit. There aren't. And it looks to me like the rules for ETFs wouldn't allow it, okay? But the only thing that I could say, there is an SJB, okay? SJB is inverse high yield, the liquid high yield index. And it is starting to rumble. It's SJB. That's the only thing I can find. Other than companies that have a lot of private debt on their balance sheet, and I will do another search for that. There are, like Blue Owl, okay? And then you got to hope that there's a if you own an IRA, you cannot short an individual stock. And that's where these single stock ETFs that are inverse, like when Robinhood is starting to roll over at 130 times PE ratio, in an IRA, you can buy WHOs or you could buy Damned, you know, but you couldn't do that before. So you do now have, and I look at inverse ETFs. I know a lot of people look at them with a jaded eye and scary and all this and no, it's just another asset class. That's all it is. It's another asset class that can be used, just like an airline would hedge against fuel cost. You can hedge, or it can be a very, very attractive investment from time to time when you get overbloated stocks. There was another one. It's one of Kathy Wood's favorite stocks. It's that crypto one that just came public, BMR and BMRZ. I can't remember. It's a crypto stock. Well, a couple days ago, they came out with an inverse ETF on that particular stock that she owns a pile of. And it's just starting to go gangbusters to the upside. So I don't know. Look, my job is to make money for clients. and protect them. And I feel like from time to time that there's another asset class out there that can come in handy. We'll be right back. But I must do the wrong call. Hit us in a bad place.
And I wonder what it's good for. This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Look what we got today. Initial jobless claims from last Thursday, 232,000, which is low. Okay, so that's still a good number. Yes, the government is open again.
It's about what it's been.
Yes, that's about what it's been. There's been really no change throughout all of this thing. Okay, here's the story Barry was mentioning. Blue Owl sinks as investor withdrawals halted at the private credit fund. You know what? This should be a major red flag to the SEC, to the FINRA, anybody who oversees the markets and the proliferation of these private credit funds. I totally am on board with Jeffrey Gundlach, who yesterday said, if this isn't nipped in the bud, it's going to be the next big crisis in our financial system. What is Blue Owl? The public, okay, there's two Blue Owls now, but the public one is liquid still, but I don't know how it can do with the other side of it, because the private side of it is also part of Blue Owl Capital. Owl stock today is, it's only down 1%, but that's a terrible chart on that thing. It's down 1.2% on 3x normal volume. And yesterday, as I was looking through Seeking Alpha at the top trending stories, number one and number two were buy Blue Owl. Okay, and it was from our couple of our favorite authors there, that their only criteria seemingly is double digit dividend yields, which is garbage. I mean, that's an area of the market that you don't want to be involved in. And I look at where we're at today in the credit markets. I mean, if you get over 6, you're starting to get into the garbage patch. You get over 10, imagine where that is, and that's where a lot of that private credit is, even beyond that. Okay.
Well, I mean, if you look at Blue Owl Capital, right, and this is where they've always popped up in front of me when I'm doing doing some queries.
Yes.
Right now, I mean, they're barely investment grade, essentially basically a 5-year note. Their yield to worst is paying 5.96%, which it's hard to find anything over 5 at the moment,
yes,
by the way. And so that tells you, number one, that's on the corporation itself. So
yeah,
these are different debt obligations that they've put together. Obviously, they've got a different collateral stack than, say, that they're not obligations per se of the entire corporation. And so these are, they're in the business of lending money, creating investment, packaging up those and selling those to folks. And if those things are going bust, then it's not great, good for the corporation as
a
whole.
Now, here it is, BlackRock, that I saw this story on. U.S. prosecutors started a probe into a group of telecom companies after BlackRock's private credit unit, HPS Investment Partners, said it loaned them hundreds of millions of dollars that were backed by receivables that appear to be fake. Oh, the Department of Justice is looking at entities associated with banking Brambot, an executive behind a bunch of companies that borrowed large amounts of capital from one of the biggest names in private credit. That's BlackRock, one of the biggest names in private credit. And I said that, you know, this has gotten, Franklin Funds is big in private credit, and it's spread to all of these large. So, you know, that would be another way to play this would be to find, I'll have to do a little bit of digging, which is a lot easier, believe it or not, with AI today, but companies that have heavy exposure to private credit. So anyways, that is not good at all. China's rare earth exports slow amid ongoing talks with the U.S. So, you know, all is not well. We did get a one-year reprieve. I still think that the rare earths, some of them, are playable, but only with that speculative end of your money out there, because we've got to solve this problem. It's a huge problem. Not only are they needed for military and, I mean, just all kinds of needs, but China's still kind of playing games with that. Now, there is a rare earth ETF, REMX, REMX, and a lot of the times the lithium stocks have some exposure. In fact, I've seen two lithium stocks, Albemarle, ALB, which is in North Carolina, and also, let's see, the other one was SQM down in Chile. Both of those stocks are breaking out to new highs. And I'm thinking, you know, Albemarle at one time did have a refinery in China for rare earth. So they know how to refine rare earth elements. And maybe, who knows, maybe
Refining's the key. That's what we've got to build up here.
Yes, that's it is the key. But
hey,
you
that's
know,
why MP has taken off. It's a very interesting, if you know, that probably would be a bad article to put together sometime. But the key to them and why they've taken off this year is they used to just, kind of like Albemarle, is they used to just create, you know, just to get the minerals.
Yeah,
then
just
send
the lithium.
Send it to China.
Yeah, you're right.
China would refine it, and then it came back. Well, now MP, starting first quarter of this year, started refining it themselves.
Yeah.
I think one of their big customers is either GM or Ford terms of magnets and those things. So that's the next level of not just getting it out of the ground, but we've got to be able to refine it here. Most of that capacity is in China, whether folks in the world like it or not.
And the environmentalists drove out the refineries of rare earth
from
America.
It's a very dirty business. Yeah.
But it's okay if China does it. You know, we're going to look the other way. Let them. Doesn't that stuff go in the same atmosphere that we have here in America? You know,
we're sharing the same planet, for sure.
We just have to come up with a cleaner, more efficient way of doing it, which I think with today's technology, you know, we're capable of doing. We've come a long ways in a lot of these areas, even in coal, you know, the burning of coal. So anyways, at the same time, China books nearly 1 million tons of U.S. soybeans sales after a brief pause. Here's one I saw yesterday. We backed out of booking.com several months ago. I didn't like the way it was trading. Google now, and this is another reason that Google has got their tentacles into a lot of things. They came up with an AI-fueled travel search engine. And I saw a lot of the travel stocks like Expedia, Trip.com, Travelocity, Booking.com, etc., selling off yesterday. I didn't really know why. We don't have any exposure to them. But it's because Google is now a big player in this online travel technology, finding the cheapest prices and everything. So that is another reason to own Google, right?
I mean, it sounds like a great reason, you know, great, you know, thing for AI, because then you can easily aggregate prices right across a wide range, an infinite range of
AI's
possibilities,
gonna
I guess, right?
Be
I
mean, a thorn in the side of a lot of businesses and a lot of workers.
Even, I mean, think about travel agents, right? I mean, and, you know, the lot of that's in the planning portion, right? Well, if you can, you know, narrow that whole process down, right? Then it it may take away from a lot of different jobs. That just happens to be one in this particular story.
Now look who's going to the debt markets. Now this is not private credit. This is as good as it gets. Amazon raises $15 billion in their first U.S. bond sale since 2022. So if you're going to buy debt and invest in debt and expect to get your money back in 7 years, your principal back, and earn a coupon along the way, what's wrong with Amazon? Meta did the same thing. Alphabet did the same thing. And I think we saw that Trump was buying those same kind of bonds. If they're best stocks now and you don't like the risk of owning equities, that you want a more predictable outcome, well, what's wrong with buying the debt, which really is slightly above U.S. government debt? That's how safe this stuff is. Now, I did see one today. Hyatt Hotels 5.4. And I just throw that out there to just show you where the credit markets are at right now. If you step up a little bit, Molina Healthcare, which sells Obamacare, is 6.5%, Barry. For me, that's a bridge too far. I'm not going to go over 5.5, or you're stepping into quicksand, okay? We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, the biggest earnings report today is Home Depot, which has become one of the soggiest of the soggy stocks out there. Soggy, it stands for stodgy old growth giant of yesteryear. Yes, I shop at Home Depot all the time. Mostly online these days, though, and have it delivered to my door. And if a lot of times there's a better product on Amazon, I hate to say it, out there, and a lot easier to find online than it is to find in the big aisles at Home Depot. And I'm sure that's cut into their traffic at their stores, number one. And number two, it's pretty hard to expand a company that's already expanded all across the country and is in pretty much every geographical location it can be in. And the stock is getting hit today, which does not surprise me. It's down 4.05%. That's an ugly chart. Ugly chart. It's gone from 426 to 343 during this sell-off. That's a 20% drop, and today's move could put it into bear market territory. And yet Home Depot, Barry, shows up in almost every portfolio that comes to us. Let me give you an idea. About 6-8 weeks ago, because a lot of people transferred accounts to us from other firms, we were up to 260 holdings at our firm, Barry. And you talk about the trimming and the gardening that I do, getting rid of the dead weight. Well, you know, I left some of that stuff in there. But when the worm starts to turn, I start getting rid of it for folks. We're down to 135 holdings. I've done 135 sales. I would have liked to have done some more, but there's a few in there that people have big capital gains in, which creates, you know, a little bit of an issue there. We have to always call them first to see if they want to trim it, because they could be in they could be in danger of losing that that capital gain there. But Home Depot was definitely one. If it got transferred to us, it went pretty quickly because it's not a growth company anymore. Look at their latest quarter. Their sales were up 3% year over year. 3%. Look at the declining sales growth. Here's the last four quarters at Home Depot. the retail giant headquartered in the pride of Atlanta. Home Depot, 4 quarters ago, their sales were up 14%. Okay. 3 quarters ago, their sales were only up 9% year over year. Last quarter, their sales were up 5%. What was this quarter? 3%. And their earnings growth is non-existent anymore. It's non-existent. And if the theory is true, and I believe it is because I've seen it too many times, that stocks follow earnings. If earnings are flat, you're going to get a flat stock. And that's what you've got in Home Depot. Their earnings are going to be down 2% this year versus last year. So no earnings growth equals no capital appreciation and a dividend yield of 2.7%. And Home Depot is down 5% today. I guess they were expecting a little better than what they got, but they didn't even get that. And not that it's a bad company, but companies have lifespans. They have cycles that they go through. And eventually you max out, you become an AT&T, you become a Verizon, you become any number of these large, Kimberly-Clark, these large soggy stocks that can't grow anymore. It's a conundrum. What do you do with them? Well, it seems like on Wall Street they just pass them around amongst themselves, you know, and trade them here, and they'll put an upgrade here, and someone will buy it over here, and they just kind of trade hands. But as far as a growth investor and trying, I mean, I think the reason that people invest in the stock market is they want to see superior capital appreciation than what they can get in owning vacant land or whatever. I mean, you're looking for growth. And if you're not buying companies that have growth in earnings or hopes thereof, then you're just kind of investing in a dead asset. Or you buy the debt. I mean, I'm not against buying debt. Good quality debt where you're going to get 5.5%, 5%. I would venture to say, you know, a lot of people have rental units. They own a home, 3 or 7, 8 homes, and they're getting. But if you stop to figure out the cap rate, Barry, after all the expenses, you know, the cost of your loan, blah, 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 what kind of return are you really getting on the money that you have invested? Well, you could do the math yourself. What's the equity in all your rental properties, and what's the bottom line earnings after all expenses that you received off of those rental properties? Divide that into your
tax benefits too.
Yes, and some tax benefits, but divide that into your bottom line, and you'll get your actual yield. Your actual yield on that investment you have, and it's not really a passive investment. I remember my father; he bought some apartments in Burbank, California, when we lived there when I was a kid. And I remember the phone ringing in the middle of the night. My toilet's plugged. Mr. Gunderson, you need to come over here, blah, blah, blah. The water's not working. I've got a flood. And he was so glad to get out of that. Now, I don't know what others' experience is. But for me, it's the bottom line. What are you earning? And you also want the value of your holdings to increase if possible. And in some states, you know, you get very little capital appreciation. If you're in Florida or in Arizona or in California, you're seeing better capital appreciation on your multi-unit properties. But I'm not so sure that the individual with 9 or 10, you know, real estate holdings is making that big of a return or yield on their equity. I don't know. Only you can do that math. Well, anyways, we're not going to have time to do it here. We're out of time. But we know what the math is on private credit. Run, hide, don't even go near it. It's toxic. And yet it's sweeping the world like the Black Plague, from my viewpoint. All right, if you'd like to talk to us, 855-611-BEST. We'll analyze your investments for you. That's Barry's job. That's his expertise. And if you'd like to see our newsletter for free weeks, GundersonCapital.com. GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.